So, yes, Kisa go to me and the mustard seed. So, a story of tragedy leading to a great seeing through, a great arising of faith, and then to enlightenment. And Ratnagosha, when he asked me to do this talk, it's probably a while ago actually, and he said, would I do something on the Pali Canon? I didn't really know what to do. And then he said, how about the Kisa Go To Me Sutta? And I said, oh yes, I definitely want to do that sutta. And strongly resonate with it, you know, maybe we all do. I don't know if we all know it, you know, and but yes, my heart response was yes, you know, I'll definitely do that sutta. And so I'll just say a bit, because I had my own story about death. I think maybe why this resonates. I had a story about deaths, and I experienced quite a lot of deaths over a period of a few years. Just before I got involved with the Dharma and through my period up to my ordination. And I had a sort of story about it, and that I'd suffered so much death. And I remember being up on my ordination retreat, that was in 2008, up in the mountains in Akashavana. And somehow, I can't remember what was happening that day, but somehow I just had this sort of sense or experience that billions of people have died. It just sort of came into my being. I think I've been doing a lot of Vajrasattva practice, and I thought, billions of people have died. And I realised it wasn't my story and never had been. But it had been my story, if that makes sense. And it was quite a moment, and it was very, very humbling. And it was quite a turnaround for me around my own experience of grief in some way. So I think that's why it's got a special resonance. So I looked up some statistics for this talk, so I was just pondering that point. I thought, I wonder how many people die in a year. You know, that just thought came to me. And according to the World Health Organization in 2012, 56 million people died worldwide. I was like, wow, 56 million people died worldwide. And apparently 2 people die each second and 4 people are born every second. That was those figures. So that was quite sort of astonishing. I think that just feed into this whole story of Kisa Go To Me. And the universality of death. So that's why I'm giving the story. That's why I'm here giving the story. I think there's this sort of Ratnagosha and then my resonance. And if you want to look the story up, it comes from the Pali Canon, part of the Terigatha, or verses of the elder nuns. So you could look for it. So I'll just talk about the story, tell the story. So Kisa, go to me, skinny or lean, go to me. And a young woman or a girl who was living in the time of the Buddha. So we're talking about over 2,500 years ago. From a very good family, but very difficult to find a match, apparently, so the story tells us. Because she was so skinny, and that wasn't the desirable form of the time. And but if that match is finally found and she marries, and in accordance with tradition at that time, and I would think it's probably maybe quite similar still, she moved in with her husband's family, where her position is very sort of low status and very tenuous. You know, who cares about Kisa Gotani in that family? Who cares about her? And perhaps we can just imagine what her experience might be like as a woman of that time. And then she becomes pregnant and she has a boy child. And in some way her status is increased. You know, she's fulfilled her duty as it's perceived to be, producing this boy child. And so in some way her life seems to improve because of her child. But then tragically her child, a toddler, dies. And what a tragedy, you know, for Kisago to me. And while I've been thinking about this talk and pondering it, at times I've just been deeply in touch with it, you know, what that's like. You know, I haven't lost a child. Some of us might have done. And the death of a child, I read somewhere, it's an agony that is unparalleled. Somebody describes it as that. Like losing part of yourself. And as a mother and a grandparent, I sort of feel that truth or something. I think it, another reason for the story resonating. So this tragic incident, and we can imagine Kisago to me would be absolutely devastated and distraught. And of course, her status was dependent on this child too. So there's a loss of status, the loss of support in the family. So she is alone with her child, and she denies that the child has died. She clings to her child and won't put the child down. And of course it's clear to everyone, and it would be clear to us, that the child has died. But Kisago to me cannot accept that truth. And imagine it. I don't know if we can imagine it. And she, in this distraught state, she starts running around trying to get some help, hoping that there's some medicine out there. So we can imagine her running around with this toddler in her arms, holding this child, gripping the child, appearing insane with grief. I would imagine that's what it would feel like, insane with grief, going out of your mind. So we could imagine, you know, if that was happening today. So much is hidden today, isn't it? We don't see it really. Things are happening in hospitals, and if we go to hospital, we come in contact with all that sickness and death and what's going on. But I, you know, when I was thinking about it, I thought what comes to mind for me is I think of like war zone scenes that you see on the news, or stories about the people in boats trying to get to this country and their children. They're experiencing the deaths of their children, witnessing that. And I remember going to the Woodland Burial Site in Norwich and just seeing this area that was dedicated to children. And it was just so poignant, you know, just this whole area. And just bringing that to life. So finally, someone tells Kisago to me that she should seek out the Buddha, and because he's a great teacher, he's this great teacher, that he might be able to be the one to give her the medicine that will save her child. So Kisago to me is fueled with hope, I would imagine, you know, would be getting there as quickly as she possibly could, going to see the Buddha, feeling that all is not lost. And perhaps we can imagine the scene of the Buddha with his disciples, perhaps they're discussing the Dharma, and then Kisago to me comes along, and immediately can imagine the Buddha giving this whole attention to this woman who's in this distressed state and asking her what's wrong. And Kisago to me begs the Buddha for help, and will he save her child? And give her some medicine to save the child. So the Buddha, of course, can see this child is dead. And, you know, he doesn't go set about giving her a formal Dharma teaching. You know, he doesn't say this is reality or this is inevitable. But he sees what's needed, you know, this... he just sees what's needed, and he asks her, he tells her he can help if she goes to the village and returns to him with some mustard seeds. And but he adds, those mustard seeds must come from a house where nobody has died. So Kisa Gotami would be, I can imagine, full of pitiful hope, running to the village and searching house after house after house. And at each one asking for mustard seeds and people willingly offering them. But then she adds, but has anybody died? And of course, in every household, someone's died. In some houses, people are in the process of death, or people are very sick, or they've just died. Some people don't want to be reminded of their own grief and tell Kisa Gotami that. So she goes from house to house to house, and each time she's met with this, the same message, one by one. So gradually the truth just sinks in. Every household has experienced the death of a loved one. No household is exempt. No one is exempt. Of course, everyone dies. Either one dies and those left behind grieve, or one grieves those who have died. And either way, everybody faces their own death. It's utterly inevitable. Every being that is born will die. But she doesn't just know this in her mind. She knows this, you know, absolutely, entirely, her whole being. You know, she's experienced it. So the Buddha could have told Kisa Gotami this truth, but he knew that she had to experience it, and she had to know in the depths of her being that this was the case. She had to meet others also who knew death, who also grieved. And in so doing, she was no longer alone in her grief. She saw the universality of her experience. And great faith arose within her for the Buddha's teachings. So this was the Buddha's teaching for Kisa Gotami. Now, he saw that she couldn't put that child down. She couldn't possibly do that. She needed to run around, carry that child, and at the same time enter this process of experiencing the truth for herself. She had to be active. So he saw exactly what needed to be done, you know, that wisdom, that compassion. He wanted her to see the truth of impermanence and death and to help her see that. So in a sense, I think, you know, thinking about what happened there, I was thinking he helped Kisa Gotami experience the four sights of old age, sickness, death, and finally a sage, a monk, or in this case the Buddha, at peace, and the Buddha at peace and ease in the world. She's the death of her own child, her only child, the family she visited, all their experiences, this extreme experience of impermanence and the four sights. And it's the sights that led to the Buddha going forth. That's what we're told in stories, isn't it? You know, that he went out and he saw old age, sickness and death, and that he couldn't settle after that. He wanted to go forth. He saw that everyone around him was sleeping, and he, in stark contrast, was like on fire, wanting to search for the truth, a state beyond old age, sickness and death, so the deathless enlightenment, nirvana. So we could say that Kisa Gotami had this experience, and also had a taste of the lakshanas, the three lakshanas, so the three marks of conditioned existence. And again, this isn't taught in a way of orally, but she's seen through something. She's seen through that all conditioned and compounded things are subject to impermanence and change. But therefore, even the relatively pleasurable and satisfying things in life are unsatisfactory. They cannot last. We really cannot hold on to anything. It will all slip through our fingers like sand. And we will either die young or experience old age, sickness and then death. And that there is no inherent self to be found. No no self to be found anywhere, that all conditioned things are ceaselessly changing. There is no self that you can find, that you can hold on to. And Kisa Gotami's response to all of this experience is just to strongly go forth like the Buddha. A huge arising of faith in the Buddha and his teachings. She doesn't go back to her old life. You know, there isn't even, there doesn't seem to be a wavering. She knows there's nothing there for her. She is not the Kisa Gotami she was. And there's been this turning around in her being. We hear that talked about in the Dharma, like this turning around. And she's on the quest. She's searching for the truth. Like the Buddha, she's on fire. So she leaves the husband, the family, conventional morality of that time, conditioned, contrived beliefs and attitudes behind her, and goes for refuge to the Buddha. So she leaves the householder life and becomes a bhikkhuni, seeking the deathless. And we're told that she continually reflects on impermanence. She keeps that reflection alive. So she's seen that, but it's not like the end, is it? She needs to keep going. So she keeps reflecting on impermanence, looking for everywhere. And until she too attains enlightenment. So that's Kisa Gotami. So going from that tragedy through to enlightenment. And then I suppose, the thinking, well, how does this teaching help us? You know, what does it have to say to us, modern people, in 2015? You know, what is it trying to communicate? And I've said, haven't I? I think that the Buddha helped Gotami experience the four sights and taste the three lakshanas. Her experience was so extreme, you know, and we may have experienced something like that ourselves, you know. We too may have those extreme experiences, or we may face them in the future. But hopefully, you know, we've got this opportunity now, and using the Buddha's practices, teachings, can help us open up to the fact that death touches everyone, open us up to this inherent part of life. And that it's a universal experience that we will experience. And we can reflect on the inevitability of death, and that we do not know when it will come. And use that understanding to affect what we do now. So reflecting on the three lakshanas, looking for them in our experience, testing out the teaching. And this can all bring urgency to our practice and help more and more faith arise. And I think the important thing, because this teaching isn't just, this story isn't to just help us look at the fact that we're going to die. It's about what are we going to do, knowing that? How are we going to live our lives? You know, what choices are we going to make? So Kisa Gotami clearly had this extreme experience, and within a day, there's been this massive transformation, and she's gone forth. And she's become a bhikkhuni. You know, and we've all stepped into the Dharma. We're all practicing in our own ways. And if we come to know this truth more deeply, the truth of impermanence, it will, and it does, it is affecting how we live our lives. So it's how to live our life, getting to know this truth more and more deeply, more and more deeply. So if we do that, you know, what happens? Maybe we become less attached to things. You know, we can see, so we're going to put it all into experience, our practice into experience. We can see that Kisa Gotami experienced something. We need to experience the Dharma directly. So we can take every opportunity, every small thing that happens, those things that really bug us, those things that really, they can be relatively minor, can't they? And they can blow us away. And we can use all of those opportunities, you know, to keep going. going beyond self, to going beyond that self, to growing. And the effect of all this, well, yes, maybe we become less attached to things, to possessions, less attached in a sticky way to people. We realise, you know, if we reflect deeply, we can't take anything with us. There's nothing we can take, only our state of mind. And, you know, maybe to the next life, you know, that's another whole area about rebirth. And we have our own views on that. We may, as a result, become more generous, more compassionate, less concerned about material things. You know, these reflections can help us become less entranced and enthralled by the passing show of life. So less attached to it, more at ease at that truth that we will die. But importantly, I think it's we prioritise. If we really look, we start to prioritise what we do with our life, what is important. What are we going to do? Where should we place our energy whilst we have it? You know, I think another important area of seeing through these truths of impermanence, of change, selectioners, is that maybe we live life so fully and deeply and compassionately, in a sense, because we see the fragility of it. And we also want to resolve everything. We don't want to leave unfinished business or regrets. We can reflect on what stops us being truly at peace with ourselves right now, you know, in this moment. So all of these things, you know, can help in us grow, our faith increase, our practice just grow deeper and deeper. So for me, a question is, how do you keep the truth of permanence alive? And I think, because I recalled, I was thinking about my father's death and the other deaths, my mother's deaths, and then these other deaths that happened. And at the time, you're sort of, you know, especially when you've got the Dharma, you can be on fire with it or something. You can be on fire with your practice. And then there's this sort of forgetting, you know, I can forget. And so how do we keep that alive? And I was thinking about how recently when I broke my wrist not long after I started life in Cambridge, and it was shattering. It was really shattering. Yes, it was like my wrist was shattered, but there was a moment there where a view of myself as robust and strong was sort of really shattered. And it's not something I would choose ever to happen, but it has been like grist for the mill or something. It's like, okay, I break. Not only do people die, it's like another reality. So another moment. And then I discovered that I had osteoporosis, and that was a massive thing. It was like somebody said to me, it's the frame of the house, Viryajyoti. And I thought, oh yeah, it's like that. And my body's changing internally as well as externally. And it was really challenging. You know, I thought, I'm always reflecting on impermanence and, you know, I'm practicing the Dharma, but it was so challenging. And but now I think a little bit later on I can see, I think I want to keep the teaching in it alive. There's something in it that's really important and can keep a sense of urgency. I need to be getting a move on. And there's this preciousness of life. There's this precious opportunity. I've got it now. Who knows, you know, for any of us. So what I do, so my practice has been, and has been for a longer time actually, is reciting the four reminders. So I try and do it on a daily basis, you know, and I try and sit at my cushion and recite it right from my depths. So I'll just read them once as a whole and then tease them out a bit. And So, this human birth is precious, an opportunity to awaken. But this body is impermanent, ready or not, one day I shall die. So this life I must know as the tiny splash of a raindrop, a thing of beauty that disappears even as it comes into being. The karma I create shapes the course of my life, but however I act, life always has difficulties. No one can control it all. Only the Dharma can free me and others from suffering forever. Therefore I recall my heart's longing for freedom and resolve to make use of every day and night to realise it. So this human birth is precious, an opportunity to awaken. So I reflect on finding the Dharma and being in a position to hear it and put it into practice. And this is said to be extremely rare and precious. I don't know where the story of the turtle popping up through the yolk in the ocean comes from. But apparently that's how rare it is. You know, the fact that we're all sitting here today and we've all had the great opportunity for the conditions to be in place for us to practice the Dharma. It's a precious opportunity to awaken. So what are we going to do with it? Are we going to continue in habitual ways of being, revolving around the wheel of life? And the Buddha describes this as being asleep, like death. Or are we going to seek the deathless, go beyond the conditioned? Are we going to make the most of now? So I try and just bring that alive, and then the next reflection. But this body is impermanent. Ready or not, one day I shall die. And, you know, I try and really convince myself of that, just to really try and bring that into life. And if we haven't experienced death, it can seem so remote. But you only have to look around, don't you? I think the more you look around, I think on the bus or when you're out shopping, you see old age, sickness and death everywhere. You know, it's just there. And also, what I love is looking for the impermanence and the beauty of impermanence. You know, I think that can help really contemplating the beautiful in impermanence. You know, flowers falling and coming and everything impermanent. And I do reflect, I think, because of what I was saying about osteoporosis, I try and reflect a bit about what's going on internally that can't be seen. That can help. So this life I must know is a tiny splash of a raindrop. So we can imagine that in your mind. I can imagine that little drop going bing or something, or see the drop in my mind's eye. And that represents the fleetingness of this life. A thing of beauty that disappears even as it comes into being. So I think there really is nothing conditioned that you can hold on to. That's slipping through your fingers like sand. You know, I try and bring that image to mind. Or that tiny splash. It's a thing of great beauty and it goes chung. The karma I create shapes the course of my life. So the way we live our lives, the very simple teaching about skillful actions, happiness follows. Unskillful actions, unhappiness follows. And I think, you know, just bringing that into being. But however I act, life always has difficulties. No one can control it all. Everything's changing. There's nothing we can hold on to. And things just happen. I broke my wrist, not at all comfortable. When I fell, I was shaken. It was really a big reminder of impermanence. And sometimes if I'm going down the stairs now, or running down the steps, just think about it. You know, at any moment. Only the Dharma can free me and others from suffering forever. Therefore I recall my heart's longing for freedom and resolve to make use of every day and night to realise it. So I still waste a lot of time, you know, and I think we probably all waste time. And but it's just like kind of keep bringing those reflections, trying to really take on the story of Kisa Go to me. So hopefully we haven't or won't experience something as extreme as Kisa Go to me. But some of us will. And we'll all experience death at some point. But meanwhile, we have this precious opportunity. Every time something relatively small happens, we can turn towards the Dharma. We can choose to go for refuge. We can change, you know, and there's that opportunity. That opportunity's there. And we can keep practicing that. And what is it? That spiritual muscle or something, somebody calls it. We're in training. Kisa Go to me didn't return to her previous life. She woke up and went for refuge. And in the heat of a difficult moment, we too can wake up. Or will we continue in the same old patterns or habits until we are faced with something extreme? You know. So we could reflect on the Four Noble Truths. We could look for the, you know, those sights, the old age, sickness and death everywhere and just keep clocking it. We can reflect on the three Lakshanas. Or we could recite or learn by heart something like the Four Reminders and have it at the tip of our tongue or something. Or a piece of Dharma that resonates deeply with us. And in so doing, bringing the preciousness of life and the inevitability of death vividly into practice, into our daily lives. And we need to look with a curious, open, compassionate, metaphor mind, you know, and there's beauty everywhere, there's impermanence, there's constant change, but trying to look with that sort of mind. And at any time, we can decide and choose to recall the story of Kisa Go to me and the mustard seed. And we can use these reflections to go forth to the Three Jewels, to go beyond our old habitual selves and move a step closer to the deathless nirvana, enlightenment, to freedom. Thank you.
Of death and impermanence and sickness and old age for us. As you were talking, I was thinking, well, you talk about four reminders and having things that we can use to remind ourselves of the Buddha's teaching, remind ourselves of those truths and those realities. And I was thinking of the short puja, which we do every Sangha night. It's a bit like a reflection, like